She's the media maven with her finger on the pulse of the heartbeat of Chicago. If it's happening in the Windy City, she's got you covered. Now here's the lady that puts the fun in fundraising, Candid Candace Jordan.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to our 10th Candid Candace the podcast. And they said it wouldn't last. I am so excited. I'm with my producer and darling co-host, John St. Augustine. John, here we are, number 10.
Who said it wouldn't last?
Nobody. I mean,
I was really, because I wanted their number. If you,
yeah,
you
know, I
want
know.
To call
I would
people.
Be at their door myself. Yeah.
No, how much fun is this?
This is so much fun. And, you know, I would not be here unless it was all about you. You're a cheerleader, a champion, an advocate. I mean, you just, and not only for me, but for almost everybody I know that you come in contact with. You are just such a helpmate. So,
well, you know why I just see, you know, look, I told you this before, John Denver and I are great friends.
Yeah.
He saw something in me when I didn't see it myself. And because of that, my career came out of that support from him. And so I've just painted forward. When I see something in people they may not quite see in themselves, I've watched your work for years. Mm-hmm. I thought this podcast thing is everywhere. It's the new thing, even though it's kind of old at this point. Mm-hmm. But it's the same kind of thing. It's, you know, when you can see something other people can't quite see, even this week, right? Oh, yeah. John, I don't have any material. BS.
I know. You were absolutely right. Well, I said, you know, John, let's do it next week because I haven't been to a lot of events. Well, that's a lie because I've got like pages and pages and pages of things to talk about.
Yeah.
But anyway, first I want to talk about a very special thing that means a lot to you. I know you're a Navy vet. And tell me what's going on. What's happening now?
Well, let's correct that. We'll start over because I'm not a Navy vet. I'm a Coast Guard veteran.
Oh, God, Coast Guard. Isn't that kind of close?
Yeah. And, no. And,
Water-related?
So, sure. But for everybody who's in the Navy and who's in the Coast Guard, we'd say, hold on a second, sister. I never spent, you know, I was in the Coast Guard from 1980 to 84. I spent 2 more years in the reserves, but I was never on a ship. Oh. You know what I was on?
No. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
you're
man.
Me.
No, for 4 years, I was at Coast Guard Air Station Chicago, even though I went to other places like Kodiak, Alaska, and Miami, and things like that. But I was with 2 helicopters right here.
Well, what was the most exciting thing that happened to you in the Coast Guard?
Oh, boy. The most exciting thing that happened. Well, the let me talk about the legal things I can talk about, because there's other stuff that was probably shouldn't talk about. Okay. But I was just writing about it today. When I came out of boot camp and I was wanting to go see the world, and that's all part of it, I had an opportunity to go to an air station. I thought, that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I would have gone on ship, but that wasn't in the cards for me. But when I got to the air station, one of the first flights I took was with a guy named Lieutenant Chris Snyder, who sadly passed away in the last couple of years. And we went up for our first flight. So there was Lieutenant Snyder and Lieutenant J.G. Angert and a air crewman, a guy whose nickname was Caveman. So there's that. And we went up out over Lake Michigan at about 1,500 feet, maybe 2,000 feet up. And Lake Michigan is basically an ocean. When you see it from the air, it's, you know, we go out about 50 yards in the water and think it's a big deal. Try go sitting in the middle of the lake for a while. But they do something called auto rotation, which is basically turning the engines off. And it's in case there's an engine failure, you have to restart the engine, know how to land in the water. And he said, so are you ready for your first auto rotation? And before I could answer, we were in free fall. And it's better than any ride I've ever taken at Six Flags. After about the fourth time, I thought, well, that's about enough of that shit. And when I got back to the hangar, I was literally woozy for about 3 hours. I couldn't quite get my equilibrium for a while. But I had some great times. As a matter of fact, on the 30th of this September, a lot of the crew that is getting back together, we haven't seen each other since the 1980s. And they're all coming back to Chicago, and we're going to have quite a reunion. And Air Station Detroit, which handles a lot of the search and rescue now south of the border across, you know, like straight across from Detroit to Chicago, they handle the south end of the lake or the north end. I can't remember which one they're doing. Traverse City still has an air station. They're flying one of their brand new helicopters over for us to have fun.
Oh, my, that'll be awesome.
Yeah. So 233rd birthday today of the United States Coast Guard. And I was on some search and rescues. Some didn't turn out real well, but other ones did. And so it was quite, I was only, you know, 22 years old. I was in until I was 25, 26. It was great.
Oh, wow. Well, happy birthday and congrats to everybody who serves. I just think that's such an incredible patriotic thing to do. And so good for you, John. I hope you have a lot of fun. Is it open to the public or is it just for...
No, it's just for us. It'll be... And especially that night. Late. So we're going to see the helicopter during the day. And that evening we'll be at some sort of place where there's liquor.
Well,
oh yeah, like, and you'll probably read about
what roads are near there, so nobody can be around.
Right, and you have to. Well, everybody luckily is staying close by, but then you know you'll probably read about it in the police blotter the next day.
Oh, great! Well, I'll look forward terrific. To that. Yeah, oh great. Well, I'll watch your social media.
Please do.
You know, that reminds me. Speaking of people who serve, I told you I think in the last podcast that I was looking forward to a very unique interview opportunity with a man who was both is both a Navy SEAL and a NASA astronaut.
Yep.
So this came about in a way that was very, very unlike what I anticipated, but it was absolutely thrilling. Mm. Now, I've never heard of this guy. He's not like one of the famous astronauts that landed on the moon. His name is Captain Chris Cassidy. But, you know, he's a winner of 3 Bronze Stars. He was in space 3 times in space, served on the space station, and he was the first astronaut to take a selfie in space.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a very intimate private affair at a beautiful lakefront home in Winnetka, and a small select group of people who were supporters of the Navy SEAL Foundation, which is who presented this event. And, you know, fortunately, I've been covering their events forever. And so I was an invitee along with Chuck. And, you know, and I got to meet this incredible human being, cute guy, darling guy, and ask him some questions that I had about outer space. Now, how many chances do you get to do that?
Right.
So he spoke first about the Navy SEAL Foundation, which he was there to represent. So here's a little soundbite of what he had to say about that.
Can I ask you just a bit about the Navy SEAL Foundation? Are you involved with the Navy SEAL Foundation?
Member, yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell me what exactly, in your point of view, they do best for the families of the Navy SEALs?
Sure. Yeah. The foundation is amazing at supporting the families, as you mentioned. The Navy supports the SEAL teams well, but it's not the Navy's mission to take care of the families. So we realized, kind of post 9/11, that. We always have known how critical that is, but it really came to light when we started having, more, quite truthfully, more bad accidents, more things that involve that are tragic for family, and it's just kind of grown, and it's more than just being there for the knock on the door. It's the follow up for the kids at going to school later to college, or paying, simple as paying for a babysitter when the guy's deployed, and it's just turned into this really, really robust support network that means a lot to our community. So I was a beneficiary of those things for while I was active duty, and now it's my turn to pay back and be on the board.
I love it. And just last question: when the selfie, you took that selfie, was that spontaneous or did you plan it?
No, totally spontaneous. Yeah.
That was fabulous.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
So you can see this guy's got a lot of fun in his little soul, which was he's not quite as serious as, you know, everybody would expect somebody like that to be. And he had a great sense of humor. And, you know, I have to brag that this was not my first astronaut that I interviewed.
Really?
Yeah. You know, first of all, I want to say that when we used to go to the Playboy Mansion in California, you know who was always there?
John Glenn.
Buzz Aldrin.
Well, they're at the okay.
Buzz Aldrin, he's been married 3 times, bless his heart. He's 93 years old.
Wow.
He never missed a party at the Playboy Mansion. He was an absolute live wire. But 2 years ago at the Museum of Science and Industry, Chuck and I were there for the, I think it was the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 8 mission. And all 3 astronauts, William Anders, Frank Borman, and Jim Lovell, were all there.
Hmm.
It was really exciting, and I chatted with them, but I could not remember one thing that they said, so we'll go on to something else.
It's a non-story, but go ahead.
But, you know, I also trapped this poor guy, Captain Cassidy, and asked. He wasn't too happy with me by the end of the afternoon. I took up a lot of his time. But anyway, I did ask him some other questions, think about UFOs and, you know, what it was most awe-inspiring moment in space, and so let's listen to that part. Okay, so Captain Cassidy, what an honor to meet you. What's your most awe-inspiring moment you've ever had when in space?
I think opening the hatch on my first spacewalk and seeing Earth below, you know, just outside, holding on with one hand, seeing Earth go by at 5 miles a second, and yeah, that was probably took my breath away.
What was your scariest moment?
Scariest moment, we had a spacewalk where my buddy and I were out there, and his spacesuit malfunctioned, and there was water leaking inside his helmet, and we had to hurry up and get back in. That was probably the hairiest moment, scariest moment.
Wow. And with all your views of the cosmos, do you think there's life on other planets?
I think that the universe is so giant. Somewhere out there, there's life we just don't know. I don't believe it's in our solar system, but it's, in my opinion, naive to think that it couldn't exist anywhere in the universe.
Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. Also, you know, what do you think about the civilians in space program? I have a friend that's like slated down years down the road to go into space. What advice would you give to civilians going into space?
So it's more complicated than just buying a ticket and sitting in row 15 seat C. And, you know, and there's risk to it, but I think it's the success of the commercial companies right now are driving that risk somewhat down, but there's always a possibility that some piece of equipment doesn't work the way it's supposed to on that given day. And so understanding those risks, understanding what you're getting into, and why we train so intently is not for the good day when everything is goes by the plan, but it's for when things start breaking that you can save yourself, save the equipment, keep the thing alive and your crewmates alive. So just having an appreciation for that and take the training seriously, because it's more than just an enjoyable ride. There's a lot to it.
Yeah. And how did your training as a Navy SEAL help you as an astronaut?
The military does an amazing job, SEAL teams in specifically, of preparing somebody to, in simple terms, walk, chew gum, talk on the radio, and make decisions all at the same time. You know, you're dealing with dynamic environment, stuff in front of you is changing, you got to talk on the radio, communicate that to somebody else so that you have coordinated effort in that mission. All of that translates exactly to being an effective astronaut. So I definitely had some advantage with that training under my belt when I got there, but the NASA training is really good, and everybody gets up to that speed eventually. Yeah.
Wasn't that something?
You know, it's so interesting because as someone, I don't have the military career this guy has. I mean, Bronze Stars is a whole other deal, but there are some basic things, basic tenets in military training. And as I'm listening to him talk, you know, you asked me about the most exciting thing. It's the same thing. It was training for failure. He's talking about the same thing. You train over and over and over again, not for the things that work, but the things that don't. Mm-hmm. So it's always training for the worst of times, not the best of the times. And the maintenance is never ending, and the training is never ending. It gets drilled in so much. And I think the big carryover, as I'm sitting here thinking about being in the service so long ago, the big carryover for me was discipline. I mean, I was a pretty disciplined guy before I went in. They just ups it to the nth degree. And so everything from like doing this podcast to writing books to speaking to everything I do comes from a sense of discipline and duty to something bigger than myself. It's kind of, and people, unless you've been in that position, you're kind of like, what are you talking about? Well, if you've been in the military or you know, and was able to extract that something bigger than you, what he's talking about here and giving yourself to that, like the Navy SEAL Foundation, there's no feeling like it in the world.
No. And, you know, it was funny. Chuck asked him a question. He says, does everyone speak English? You know, because he's been on the space station. And he said, that was the hardest part of astronaut training for him personally, was learning language. He said, it's the official language on the space station, which is the United States, Russia, Germany, Japan, Canada, and the European Space Agency. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, on top of all the other things they have to learn, they have to learn that. And then the last thing that I thought was really interesting, they asked, you know, about his perspective about, you know, the Earth and conservation and things like that. And he says, you know, when you're up that where you are and looking out the window, you can see dry lake beds, forests burning on the Amazon. Yeah. You can see that on a very global scale. He says you see volcanoes erupting with clouds that stretch a third of Earth away. And you get an appreciation for how tied in the Earth is globally.
Right.
And so, I mean, you know, it's obviously a life-changing experience. But anyway, I want people to know that the Navy SEAL Foundation, which is absolutely one of the most worthwhile nonprofits I know of, is going to host its 12th signature fundraiser. It's called the Midwest Evening of Tribute. It'll be at Navy Pier's Aon Grand Ballroom, on Wednesday, September 13th. So mark your calendars and try to go. It is such an incredibly moving, obviously patriotic event that the first time we went, I mean, we just cried all night. I mean, out of, you know, pride and happiness and, you know, to see all those guys in full military dress, and they do incredible. They show, you know, with the arms and stuff, they do all kinds of maneuvers. And I mean, it's just, it's absolutely fascinating. And last time we were there, they honored Ken Griffin with the Patriot Award. So they always have somebody that's very special as an honoree. So it's a really, really great event. But
it sounds like you had it was a pretty interesting party. I'm thinking, wonder what kind of eats they had there.
Oh my God, they had a beautiful buffet on the lawn. First of all, let me describe this home. Okay, it's a block long, and it's and they had the red, white, and blue bunting all along the front as you come in with balloons. And then when you walk into this huge expanse of green lawn, you see an infinity pool. And beyond the infinity pool, you see Lake Michigan.
Oh, wow.
So let me set that up. And then they have this beautiful buffet with my favorite food, hot dogs, ice cream, hamburgers.
Boy.
I mean, it was an all-American, you know, picnic. And it was just, it was so well done. And he spoke inside this, you know, tent, you know, like a cupola with wicker and climbing wisteria vines.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it was really something else. It was an incredible experience all the way around.
Very cool.
Yeah. So anyway, and also I have some news. You know that I am now a contributor to Crane Chicago Business.
I heard a rumor.
Yeah, well, the rumor's true. Candid Candace is in Crane's.
And is it a weekly column?
It's going to be, well, you know, events don't happen on a regular basis.
Right.
So, you know, my first column was from the Lincoln Park Zoo. The second column that just came out yesterday is from Paw's Beach Party. And so as they come, as the good events come, you know, then you will see them. And you have to subscribe, though. I've got to be honest. This is not something you can just pick up or read the whole article.
Listen, if you're going to subscribe to things, and this is how I see it, you know, we're inundated with this stuff, but something like Crane's, which has such valuable information, is worth it.
Yeah. In every way, shape, or form. You know, they have a million unique visitors per month on their
website. Not surprised.
And over 2.2 million page views per month.
Wow.
First issue came out in 1978. And thank you, Jim Kirk. He's the publisher. And
is that Jim Kirk? Is that where he is?
Yes.
No kidding.
And do you know who was instrumental in suggesting me for this role?
Mm.
Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas.
Wow.
Now that is a friend and a half. I mean, she kept at him saying, "Now you need Candace, you need Candace," and you know, fortunately, he agreed with her eventually, and here I am.
Listen, Maria Pappas' interview and conversation between the both of you was incredible. It's one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, thank you. I absolutely, well, you know how much I love her. So, I mean, I could go on and on and on and on and on. But you know, our last podcast with Bill Curtis and Donna LaPietra got a lot of interest. People loved that.
You know, it's like this, the thing, you know, conversation's important, but really important conversation isn't always heard. And the people that you have on this show and the conversations, I find myself sitting back going, this is great. Because you're talking to Bill and Donna. Most people are not in on the conversations you would have with them privately. This is like having private conversations in public. That's how I see it.
That's true. That's interesting. That's a good way to put it.
I think so.
So let me tell you what I did this morning. So I went to Paw's Adoption Center on Clybourne.
Yeah.
I looked at three Chihuahuas.
Uh-oh.
I want them all. Of course, Chuck wisely declined going, and because he's, you know, he wants a dog,
never
but he doesn't want a dog.
Yeah,
you know, it's like that kind of thing.
Yep.
So I sent him a photo of these two little dogs, and he says, that's what I was afraid of. But speaking of Paws, you know, we also attended their fabulous 20th annual beach party, which was held at Offshore not long ago. And they had 400 people attend and 100 little dogs dressed in Hawaiian outfits.
Gosh.
Sunglasses, Hawaiian t-shirts, one of those things called little... Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
anyway,
I do.
Can you imagine how cute that was, John?
Listen, you know, you're going to have to work with me in this one. I come from a time where no dogs wear clothes. So I kind of get it, but I don't. So every time you bring this up, like, I go, okay, I can see it.
Oh, well, you have to. Well, you'll have to look at my article and see the pictures because they're darling pictures. You know, it was emceed by Country Radio Hall of Famer Lisa Dent, who I'm sure you know.
Oh, sure.
WGN Radio, and Jake Hamilton of Fox 32, the entertainment reporter. And I mean, it celebrated. Listen to this. Since their founding in 97, they have adopted out 80,000 animals.
Wow.
Pets.
Wow.
80,000.
Impressive.
Isn't that an incredible number?
It really is.
Yeah.
It really
and,
is.
And you know, they always get incredible auction prizes too. And one of their silent auction prizes was tickets for four to Lionel Messi's first game here in Chicago
big
on
bucks.
At Soldier Field on October 4th. So that
wow.
was cool.
Wow.
And yeah, so it was just, they raised lots and lots of money. They had, you know what, another thing that was so interesting, and Chuck actually pointed this out. He says, you know, it's amazing how many young people are so wealthy. You know,
it's true.
The tickets were not inexpensive, and you know, they were bidding on like $16,000, you know, trips
yeah.
to Costa Rica for 10, and
yeah.
It was packed, and so it's nice to see that the economy is doing well
mm-hmm.
from that aspect. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it was interesting.
Do you guys bid when you go, or you just kind of just watch?
No. Well, we used to bid.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell
bidding
us.
Days are over.
Yeah, bidding days are over. Now I try to support them in other ways.
Yeah, but, as you should. I think yeah. it was, I've been to, you know, I used to a lot of sports auctions and stuff like that. And I donate. I've had so much sports stuff. I don't know that I've ever had a second career in sports collecting, but I just, over the years, I've picked stuff up or people gave me things or whatever. And back in 2007 or 08, I had, it was 07, I believe it was. I had, Brittany Payton, Jarrett Payton, and Connie Payton come in to talk to Dr. Oz when I was doing Oprah Radio about the Walter and Connie Payton Foundation.
Oh.
And Connie came in and gave me this lithograph, and it was a lithograph I had worked on with Walter in 1993.
Oh.
And it was number 2 of 34 proofs.
Oh.
And they gave Oz number 1. I thought, well, I think you got that backwards. But anyway,
yeah.
but we had a great time, and I had that for years, and then a friend of mine, unfortunately, developed a lot of heart problems and other medical problems. He did a big fundraiser, so I donated it, and it made a lot of money. And then, and unfortunately, he passed away. I mean, it all kind of went the way it was supposed to go. And then for years, I tried to find another one. I couldn't, and I finally found one. But my point is that it's amazing to me what people will spend money on when it comes to perceived value. I mean, just, I always think about you when I happen to see Antiques Roadshow.
Oh, yeah, right? That's right, yeah. Thank God I didn't throw my Playboy costume away.
Right,
that's for
right.
sure. I mean, that was amazing. You know, on a sad note, you know, Jim O'Connor, we passed away
yeah,
recently.
Yeah.
And he was, as we all know, he was such an incredible human being and philanthropist. But what I remember him most from, and that's was from being the founder of, you know, the Big Shoulders Fund, which I
right.
always, you know, covered, supported, and and he said that actually out of all of his accomplishments that he was most proud of founding that nonprofit. And,
really?
You know, they raised over $600 million
oh my gosh.
For 92 Catholic schools since it was founded in 1986. And you know, he's also, at age 43, he was the president and CEO of ComEd.
Mm-hmm.
He was the youngest leader of a publicly held company in the United States.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, so this guy was really something.
And you know,
special.
CJ, this goes back a little bit to what I talked about in the military and our astronaut friend said. Jim put himself into things bigger than himself. I'm telling
mm-hmm.
you, there is no greater return when you do that. There just isn't. All the things that you do to support these organizations is because it's bigger than you are. And then the ripple effect occurs. So it's always amazing to me how much time, energy, and effort you and Chuck, who I'm sure at sometimes you got toothpicks to hold your eyeballs open because I don't know how you guys do this, but all those events need that support. They need to be heard from. And,
yeah,
you know, so
well,
it's important.
That's true. I mean, I'm writing as fast as I can. But speaking of nonprofits, another one. Do you know Shedd just unveiled?
I'm so excited.
Shedd Aquarium. They're spending $500 million
yes.
on a renovation. But the one thing that I'm sad about, I will tell you right now, I mean, it does all sound fabulous, and I'm sure it needs a renovation. But, you know, they're getting rid of that Caribbean reef.
Yeah, I know.
And that's
yeah.
like that antique-y looking thing.
Yeah,
where they
yeah.
ask you where the, you know, what's that guy's name that goes down in there?
The diver.
Diver, yeah. I couldn't think of his name.
Well, and, it's not his real name, but yeah, go ahead. Dan Diver?
Yeah, Dan the Diver. And he feeds the fish, you know, while the people that
yeah.
stand there and take pictures. I mean, what are they going to do? That was iconic. It's been
I
there
know.
Since 1971. I love that.
I'd have left
that.
It. But, you know, we don't have that call, but I'd have left it. I'm with you because, and do you remember Diver Dan in Chicago on TV?
No.
All right. Well, there was a diver, Dan, so we'll call Diver Dan, not Dan Diver. But yeah, you could ask questions and the diver would hear you and he could answer.
Oh, wow.
Inside the, yeah.
Well, I'm sure that they had that capability there at that Caribbean Reef because, you know, he would do things. People could get engaged in front of him and he'd be standing behind him for the photos. I mean, it was really, it was so special. And they have 30,000 animals there with over 1,000 species. So
it's amazing. Amazing place.
So good that they're doing it. Bad that the Caribbean Reef is going away. So there's my two cents.
Wow.
Also, we did go recently to the Randolph Street Market. You know how much I love Sally Schwartz.
Yes,
you know, she's been on our show.
Yes.
And they celebrated their 20th anniversary market this weekend. And they had nearly 200 dealers. It was the biggest market she's had so far. And, I mean, this girl is just, she makes these things a happening. It's not just a cool vintage market to buy goods from. I mean, it's a party. It's an absolute party. She's got cocktails. She's got DJs. She's got live music. I mean, it's just, it's spectacular. The next market will be September 23 and 24. So people should not miss it. It is so much fun.
I've been there a couple times. Some of the coolest stuff, some of the most amazing items, very unique.
Mm-hmm.
Offerings.
Yeah, oh, very different. I bought lots of things there. Actually, I bought several vintage Christmas collectibles because, you know, I love antique Christmas stuff. And speaking of festivals, Amder Productions, another favorite of mine, and they've been around for 40 years. They were founded by Amy Amder, and we're going to have her, I said before this, on the show soon. But they're going to have their first Wilmette art show this weekend, followed by the Printer's Row Art Fest, which I absolutely love, on August 12th and 13th. So mark your calendars down for that. You know, summer in the city here. I mean, there's nothing better, right, John?
Absolutely. Hot town, summer in the city.
What's back on your schedule? Neck. What do you do?
So actually, today, when we wrap all this up and I put it and so the rest of the city can hear it, we're heading off to a baseball game, not the Cubs game, because they're already playing, but we're heading to Kane County to see the Cougars. I'll drive out to Kane County and watch the Cougars play baseball tonight.
Oh, it's going to be a beautiful night.
As Harry would say, it's a gorgeous night for baseball.
You do such a good job.
Gorgeous.
Well, you know, we got to talk about the elephant in the room, Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
So are you a Lolla fan?
I am not in the wheelhouse.
Nope, I'm not either.
No.
But, you it's a big deal. I will tell you, it's a big deal. Well, you know, it's the largest festival in the running festival in the United States. So, and one of the largest music festivals in the world. And I guess today they opened with Billie Eilish, and they expect to have like, 400,000 people attended last year. But, you know, I read on trulyexperiences.com, this website, they said that 96% of the people plan to use drugs. That's a pretty high statistic. So
96%
of the, when the of people,
what's wrong with the other 4%
of people? They got the statistic. Yeah. This is from trulyexperiences.com. I was just Googling around, see what I could come up with. And that's one of the statistics. So anyway,
well, isn't that interesting? Do you know where the word Lollapalooza comes from?
No.
You want to know?
Yeah.
The word, sometimes alternately spelled and pronounced as Lollapalooza with S's, not Z's in it, Lollapalooza, dates from a 19th century, early 20th century American phrase meaning an extraordinary or unusual thing, person, or event, an exceptional example or instance. And the earliest known use was in 1896. In that time, the term also was referred to as a large lollipop.
Oh, my word.
There you go.
You're a font of information. So no, we should call.
I'm a font of. Okay, good.
You are. We should call our podcast a Lollapalooza.
Paying homage to the term's double meaning, a character in the festival's original logo holds a lollipop.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Well, listen. So you know, there's a lot of events coming up, John. I know you're not an event person, but I'm telling you, I'm getting excited.
Listen, I got to tell you, Summer in the City is fantastic. Last week we were at the Newbery Book Sale right across from where you were at, and I sent you a picture of the fountain.
Yeah.
And every time I go there, I think of Rick Kogan.
Oh, yeah.
Bughouse Square, right?
Right. Well, you know what we bought there one time?
What's that?
We bought a signed advanced reading copy from the Game of Thrones.
What?
Yeah, signed by, I don't know, I can't remember.
How much did that cost you?
Well, it cost more than Chuck wanted to pay.
Well, you know what's interesting to me, because I don't look, I mean, my highly significant other is the book person. She literally has enough books to have her own library.
Yeah.
And so we'll turn some in, and, you know, we don't turn them in there, but we, you know, move them around a little bit. If I pick out two books a year, I'm done for the day. That I'm amazed. I sit in people watch of all the humans that go to Newberry, they wait in line, and then they go in bags and just start, you know, scarfing this stuff up. And to me, on one hand, it's really heartening because the print world is still alive and well. There are people, yes, lined up around the block. On the other hand, I think to myself, who's got time to read all this stuff? Because I don't.
Well, I like to collect it, and I, yeah, read it. And, you know, of course, I love the movies, the Game of Thrones. I mean, I watched it 1,000 times. But it's George R. R. Martin, it was signed by, obviously. Yeah. And it's an advanced reading copy. And so they have, you know, from high to low, there's a price point for everybody that goes to that book fair, which is really incredible. I'm glad that they still do it.
Yeah, you know, the one highlight for me of any book fair I've ever been to, so Lake Forest, we know where they're all at. They're, everybody has a book fair at some point. Mm-hmm. And it was probably 4 or 5 years ago at Lake Forest. I go walking through. It's not nearly as big as the Newberry. It's in the gymnasium at Lake Forest High School, I believe. And there's my first book is in there. Somebody bought it. It's signed to them, and they're selling it.
Wow.
And I'm thinking to myself, that's either really cool that I made it that far, or why did you get rid of it? You didn't like it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. That's what you always want to ask.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me mention some events that's coming.
Please do.
Okay, thank you, John. So first off, this coming Monday, August 7th is, you know, I've talked about this before, and I'm so excited about it. It's the Service Club of Chicago's Day on the Terrace Fashion Show and Fundraiser. I have the honor of walking in the finale for Neiman Marcus Michigan Avenue, and the event raises funds for other various nonprofits in Chicagoland. They have a vetting process where, you know, leaders from each nonprofit will come in and give a presentation. And then at the end, they choose like 40 or so nonprofits and give out, you know, not money, but they'll, you know, give them things that they need, like a new bus or, you know, computers or tablets for kids or things like that. So, I mean, they do such good, and every dollar they raise, 100% goes towards their grant, philanthropic grant program. So that's going to be Monday, August 7th at the Peninsula. And listen to this. Now, this is new news, even though it's coming up pretty quick. But the Ingalls Development Foundation is going to have a fundraiser at the Tinley Park Convention Center with Diana Ross.
Wait, what?
Diana Ross.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Isn't that awesome? September 9th, Saturday. And it's going to benefit the UChicago Medicine and Ingalls Memorial Hospital. So
very
that
cool.
Should be awesome. I can't wait for that. And then Dance for Life is going to be Saturday, 8/19. And now this is an opportunity like none other in Chicago. All the major dance companies come together at this event to raise funds for dancers in need. It's for their Dancers United Fund. Like, you know, some of that might be sick, or, you know, they're mm-hmm. not working and they need money to survive or whatever. And this event, all the dance companies, the Joffrey, Giordano Dance Chicago, Hubbard Street, they all come together at this one joyous celebration, raise money, and then the money goes to those in need in the dance community. So it's really, really a special event on Saturday, August 19th. And then if you love Greek food, and who doesn't? Do you like Greek food?
Absolutely.
Gold Coast Greek Fest, September 15th, 16th, and 17th at Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church. Authentic Greek food and valet parking is available. And you know what? This party is on every night until 11 p.m., so you can really have some fun.
Put on the feed bag in a big way.
Put on the feed bag. Get your beer mugs ready.
Oh,
I mean,
boy.
I can't wait for that. And then Friday, September 22nd, the Flair event, another fashion show fundraiser, will be it's for the Chicago Lighthouse, and it's going to be at the Ritz-Carlton. It's going to honor a really dear friend of mine, Tracy Tarantino DeBono, who does so much in Chicago for so many people. She's the founder of Zazz Productions, and they do fashion shows all over the city, charitable fashion shows. And it's going to be a terrific event. It's going to be co-chaired again by Cheryl Bodine, Sherry Lee Fox, and Sherry Shimmer. And I'm going to be one of the co-hosts. So
nice.
I look forward to that. And Eversight is going to celebrate their 25th anniversary celebration, October 13th, Friday. And it's going to honor Person of Vision, John Roback, who was our first podcast mm-hmm. interview. And he is a very deserving guy, as you know. And also Dr. Maria Cortina as the Gift of Sight honoree. So that's October 13th, Friday. And then Music of the Baroque, another one of my favorite nonprofits, is going to have their annual gala October 21st, Saturday at the Fairmont. I won't miss that. And last but not least, I want to mention that, you know, the Gold Coast fashion show has been around for, oh my God, decades. You used to have all of the, you know, Abra Wilkin and all the social society women as models. And anyway, it's coming back. It's the 67th annual Gold Coast Fashion Show. It's going to be at the Peninsula and one at the Garrity back to back. And it's called September 18th and 21st. So it, yeah. So let's see. Who is that? Let's see. Hold on. Okay, so the proceeds, I have to make this clear, the proceeds will support the board's two-year, $2 million commitment to the Pritzker Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Health at Lurie Children's. So that's where the funds will go. So it's going to be a wonderful summer of fashion and fundraising.
May I say one more time, the conversation is important. An important conversation is even more important. It sounds like a little bit of a repetitive term, but the fact is that what you just talked about, you really got to dig to find it if we don't put it up here on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh no, this stuff is not easily located.
Correct.
You know, I'll tell you, in the past, there used to be so many avenues to find social events. And those are all gone. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I think that I am the last remaining person that really cares and shares this information on a regular basis. So, you know, my blog, Candid Candace, is in its 15th year. It's the Chicago's first and longest running lifestyle blog. I'm very, very impressed and proud of it.
Yep.
And I work hard at it, as you know. And it's brought me a lot of good things. It got me my first job at the Tribune.
Right.
You know, and so on and on and on. And I love, there's so much going on in Chicago. Yes, we can get pissed at this city. There's no question.
Right.
I mean, things are not always perfect. But I'm telling you, when you look around and you see all the things and all the good that goes into this city and the people that live here and their hearts and how dedicated they are, I mean, you can't turn your back on it. It's just, you have to let the little things slide and concentrate on the good. I mean, that's what you need to do. And that's what I do with all my platforms. And you do this very same thing too, John.
There's a lot of people doing a lot of good. And some of the conversations we have on this program is about that. And people not knowing, I never heard of so-and-so doing this or doing that. And next thing you know, there's more and more exploration to do in this great city. I never asked you this question because, you know, you're blogging all the time and, you know, obviously you're putting these columns together and stuff. Mm-hmm. So is this something like when you were a kid or when you were a young person that was like something you always wanted to do, or where did this start?
You know, that's an interesting question. And I've always had a journal and, you know, been a diarist and, you know, like to write things down about where I am, what I'm doing. But when I moved out of my hometown, I mean, I'm an only child, I think everybody knows that. And I'm really close to my mom. And when I left DuPo, you know, we went everywhere together. She was more like a sister than she was a mother. I mean, and we talked about everything and go everywhere. And so when I left to move here, I wanted her to still come along with me to all these parties. And so the way I would write would be very descriptive because I want to make her feel like she was there with me.
Oh, very cool.
And so, you know, and that's what happened from there. And that's why I started writing the blog, because, you know, I wanted her to see everything that was going on. And, you know, and fortunately it was something that other people could relate to as well. So it grew from my mom reading it to, you know, a nice following. So, yeah, but that's how originally I started. Yeah.
I've
always loved to write. And as you have too. I mean, you are the most incredible writer I may have ever seen.
Oh, I don't know about that.
You are. I mean, your books, I mean, the things that you, and the way you put words together, it's like it's unlike anybody else I've ever read. And I mean, even your social media posts are like little works of art. I mean, truly, it's really, you're a very special man, John.
Every English teacher I've had is spinning in their graves because they heard you say that wherever they're at. Because I didn't take any classes. I don't know where this comes from. I'm glad that it shows up. I know that my big influence when I was young was my dad, who would read a lot. We had this huge library in our front hallway in the northwest side of Chicago. And every other day he'd take a book out and he'd go to work and he'd come back. I'm like, what is he doing? And he would never tell me to read a book. He would say, you might want to read this, which got my curiosity up. And then I started reading short stories and I thought, well, how do these people write so much in such a short amount of time and short space? And so that was the influence. But I never in a million plus 5 years thought I'd ever be an author, much less a literary coach, and write books for other people as well as my own. Pretty cool.
Look at that. How many books have you written?
I have three of my own, and I've written seven for other people.
Oh my God! Oh, that is unbelievable. Well, I'm lucky to have you here. There's no question about that.
Well, it's a mutual admiration society.
Mm. Now, tell me a little bit, speaking of books, your latest one is?
So it's the autobiography of Randy Hundley. It's Randy's catcher for the Cubs in the great years of the 60s and 70s, and he's been a longtime friend of mine, and I just think the world of him, and he's the guy that started everybody catching in baseball with one hand. His dad taught him how to do it when he was a kid. And when he got to the major leagues, they tried to make him catch two-handed, which everybody was doing at the time. It was the way that you did it. And he kind of broke the mold and became a one-handed catcher. And ever since then, everybody, when you watch TV or go to a ball game, all the catchers catch with one hand because of Randy Hundley. Oh. So that's that part in baseball history. And then he, when he retired in 1977, he kind of knocked around a little bit here and there. He was looking to become a major league manager. That didn't happen. But what did happen was he created these baseball fantasy camps. Didn't exist before Randy. And so he started that in 1983 was his first camp. And I've gone over this book. It'll be out in August. I've gone over this book 150,000 times looking for errors and typos. And, you can't see it after a while. But then when I take a break and I look at it, I realize what an incredible journey he's had. And I got to tell you, I'm having a moment here because I'm here in my studio, not far from you. And we're getting ready for this book launch. It's a private event in August on the 20th. But I have Randy's 1967 Gold Glove Award in my studio.
Oh.
I'm holding it for the book launch because it'll be on display there. And I've been staring at this thing for 2 weeks.
Oh.
And for a kid who grew up in this city, diehard Cubs fan, was all part of the 1969 thing that didn't turn out quite the way we hoped. A kid who used to wait on the corner for his autograph. For me to be the guy that gets to write his book with him, spend time with him as I have for the past year. And we've been friends a long time, but this last year, very condensed time together. And to have this in my office is way beyond my effing pay grade.
Talk about full circle
moment. Very
I
cool.
Mean, even beyond. That is incredible. Well, I can't wait. And I will see you there.
You will.
And I'm looking forward to it. Speaking of books, Michael Kutz's book, he was the founder of the Chicago International Film Festival, has been made into audiobooks.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and they look great. There's 5 discs, and so like 5 hours, mm-hmm. I think, and he reads it himself, and he's got clips of all these celebrities
that is cool.
Dealt with all throughout, his life. I mean, he's led an extraordinary life among the glitterati, and then I read the book. The book is absolutely fabulous, and now I can't wait to hear him and the celebrities themselves, recount these stories on tape. So it's available at Amazon. And where can people get your book?
Well, when it comes out, it'll be available. It'll be able across the board, Amazon. But we're really going to push it direct from the publisher, which is Lulu, LULU.com. Much more friendly for authors. I'm a fan of the Amazon, but mostly the river, not the... Yeah. So,
yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
I get it.
So, so when that happens, we'll definitely let people know how to get it. And it's a great labor of love for Randy. And, it'll be an audio as well. I'll be reading the book here shortly.
Oh, fantastic. Now, how old is Randy?
He is 81.
Oh, my God. God bless him. Yep. That's great.
And well, he's one of the last remaining Cubs of that era. Most of them, Ron Santo, Ernie Banks, are all gone. Glenn Becker, Jim Hickman, Fergie Jenkins wrote the foreword to this book, so that was great. And so there's a lot of moment here for me. And I may even, on the 20th, people, like I said, we're going to have quite a crowd there. You and Chuck will be there as well.
Yeah.
I'd expect a little emotion out of the big guy here, because this might hit me pretty hard. This is pretty amazing stuff we're doing.
This is. It's huge. And don't worry, I'm going to bring a lot of tissue.
Well, I'm thinking more something like a brown liquid would help.
Oh, well, we're going to do both for sure. Well, I love you, John St. Augustine, and I thank you for making this possible for me. And I hope everybody's enjoyed this edition. We have so much to share, and there's so much good going around. And so this is the place to find it. Thanks for listening again, and we'll see you the next time.
Thanks for listening to the Candid Candace podcast. For more of what's going on in Chicago, go to CandidCandace.com.